On today's episode of The Good Word, Dan Titus joins me to discuss all that happened last night in Luka's reunion with Dallas, what that means for the Lakers moving forward, the craziness in Denver with the coach and GM both gone, the Golden State Warriors dropping the game they shouldn't have, and what to do with the Phoenix Suns. All that and much more coming up right now. Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports. A bit of business before we get into the show today. We are, of course, on YouTube, so rate, review, subscribe to us there, as well as all the places you get your audio podcast. It is a Thursday. I am back home. I was in Dallas last night for that. I missed that old thing. I want that old thing back. Game between the Lakers and Mavs. My man Dan Titus is here with me. What's going on, Dan?
What's up, Vin? Good to talk to you about, man. It seems like it was revenge night last night.
Yeah, like revenge body. I've heard of such things. Like, you ever hear, you get your heart broken and all that, and then next thing you know, you see somebody later, and you got that, man, she lost weight like that?
She got that old thing back.
Now, let's be clear. Luka Doncic ain't getting no revenge body. There's no revenge body happening with Luka Doncic. There's just revenge game. And that man looked absolutely miserable, Dan, when they were playing that 3-minute video tribute before they announced him. He looked despondent. He put the towel over his face. His eyes were red, all that stuff. And then, Dan, he came and gave them the beats. 31 of his 45. In the first half, I think that was his first 30-point half of the season with the Lakers. I think he had one with Dallas earlier before he got traded. They run away with the game in the fourth quarter. It turns into a laugher. The fire Nico chants, which were really weird. The way that Luka was cheered every time he dribbled the ball. Like, it was literally one of the more bizarre scenes I've ever seen since I've been covering the NBA, and I've been doing this for about 15 years. Dan, I'm sure you watched it on TV, which produces a completely different feel from being it in the building. You tell me what stuck out.
It was a good moment. Like, I don't think I've ever seen. I'm wondering what was more surprising. Was it like Luka going for 45, 8-6? I thought he was going to go off, but how emotional he was. The tribute video, I'm not a fan of tribute videos. I talked about the Jimmy Butler one before, but this one was like warranted and necessary. There was still a lot of healing that needed to be done in the Dallas fan base. And I think maybe he was caught off guard by the adulation that he got. And, you know what I'm saying, like the jerseys, everybody was decked out in some kind of Luka attire, whether it was a Lakers jersey, Dallas jersey, Cuban was in the building, just a lot of emotions. And for him to perform at that level with that type of emotions weighing on him, that was special. A lot of people can perform, you know, it's kind of like a championship hangover thing. They raise the banners, they do the whole thing, and then they go out and play like shit. Whereas this one was like, Luka was emotional. He was crying. I don't think we've ever seen Luka be that emotional and then go out and still do the thing. That was great to see, man. So I enjoyed watching the game. I didn't feel anything for Nico Harrison. Like, I'm surprised he was in the building. I'm surprised he even showed his face, to be honest.
You got
to
show up. You can't run from that smoke.
I mean, he's got to run from that smoke because you're just embarrassing yourself at that point. Because I love how the camera just kept on going from, let's see the Lakers and how they're celebrating Luka, and then let's go to this guy in the corner in the tunnel that's, like, barely showing himself in the arena. Yeah, man, that's – hey, at least he got one sellout for the rest of the year. But I don't think he's going to be getting much more.
It's a tough thing. For one, I saw Nico, but I saw him like from where my seat was, where I could kind of have a direct line of sight to the Mavs tunnel. But that's where he watches games anyway, most of the time, when he's at his home arena. The thing that stuck out to me, like the whole crying thing, you ever seen, Dan, or maybe you could be this person, like, I don't know, right? The person who cries right before they about to fight. Have you ever seen or been around that person that they're arguing and they're like, ooh, and next thing you know, their face is red. They're not like snot nose crying, but there's visible tears. And then they give you the beats. I've seen that in my life. I've seen that happen to someone in my life and it wasn't me, and I've learned, leave those people alone. They are holding something in, and they will deliver something that is not meant for you. But if you are calling for it, they will answer. And that's what that was last night for Luka Doncic. He needed something cathartic in a way. The Dallas Maverick fans needed something cathartic. They didn't have a chance since the trade happened on February 2nd, which is, God, that was 2 months ago, right? Doesn't seem like it. Feels like it was 4 months ago. Seems like it was yesterday.
Yeah.
The Mavs fans did not have a chance to express to Luka exactly how they felt about him. It's been all online and all these other places, and expressing displeasure with Nico Harrison, but not love for Luka Doncic. So they've been holding that in. You know what I compare that to? And I know we're making a lot of metaphors here. Dan, you know what I compare it to? That's like going to a funeral every day and you don't have a repast. All you guys are sad.
Right.
You don't have like the end of it where you're eating good food, and if you're black, you wind up dancing celebrate or something life. Like that and celebrating at the end of it. It was just a funeral every day for that franchise and those fans. And then, boom, you rolled back the stone, and here comes Luka for a one-night engagement. So guess what? The Dallas Mavericks played a road game last night.
We're going in.
They played a road game last night. That was the first ever road game for a home team.
Yeah. It was. I mean, and the cool thing about it is they got to clinch a playoff berth in the same vein too. Like it's like not only did we take care of business, but Luka also got his everything that he needed and wanted out of that situation. Couldn't have been better if you were a Lakers fan last night, because that was everything you wanted to see. But then also at the same time for Dallas, maybe they got some consolation or like some closure to a certain degree of like, oh, we got to give Luka a good send off and know how much he meant to us.
Oh, no, that ain't no closure. Oh, no.
For this season, it is.
No,
it ain't closure for Nico. It ain't closure for Nico.
It ain't no closure for none of them. Like, I'm going to send Dakota this picture I took last night of they were chanting fire Nico every time someone was at the foul line. Didn't matter who was at the foul line. Didn't matter what was going on. It was like one person said fire Nico and then 20,000 people said fire Nico.
That ain't changing.
Right. Not only is that not changing, here's the thing. They thought they had their guy for the next 15 to 20 years. I saw more people there, and I got the feeling that there were more Luka Doncic fans than Dallas Maverick fans.
Right.
Like, it was the behavior. And I said this to some people. It felt so weird. It felt like this was a franchise that did not have connective tissue, that did not go to the NBA Finals in 2006 and win in 2011. Like, this was their one chance to win something worth a damn. You know what I mean? Like, that's what it felt like, as opposed to this being one of the more successful franchises over the last 25 years with some blips in between and everything else. It felt like it was more Team Luka than Team Mavs. And that struck me. And I guess it struck me in Dan, the connection that Luka made in a reasonably short period of time
with that community.
It was 6 years, and he had a full career of 6 years. Like, I was thinking about it, like, there was the Porzingis years, and there was the Brunson years where they tried to figure stuff out there, and you let him walk, and then you go to the Western Conference Finals in 22, and then you miss it all together, you know, to tank the next year, and you wind up with Derek Lively. There's been so many ups and downs and dips here. And I think the thing that people have the hardest time reconciling is you didn't have a reason to trade Luka Doncic. In the minds of the public, you did not give a sufficient reason. Excuse me, let me say it again. You did not give a satisfactory reason why you traded this 25-year-old with five All-NBAs. And the guy you got in return, with no shade to Anthony Davis, because this is the biggest trade in NBA history, not just because of Luka Doncic, but because of the guy on the other side. Anthony Davis was out there 13-6. Like, there wasn't going to be as much emotion for him as it was going to be for Luka, right? Like, you understand that. But you that thought sense. That AD would have come with a more defiant mindset, given the stakes, given the moment. But it's like he melted into the moment. And maybe that's what the Lakers long knew when this Luka deal first came in their way, because if they felt like, hey, man, we got the best two-way player in basketball for the next, you know, 5 to 7 years, you're not trading him for Luka Doncic. But they didn't believe in Anthony Davis as the, like, the sole torchbearer for the franchise on whatever day LeBron James leaves. And I'm not convinced he's ever going to leave. He's going to play until he's like 75 years old.
At this point. Yeah, I think that was probably the more disappointing side of the of this game to me, was that Anthony Davis just wasn't locked in offensively. I mean, he did grab 11 rebounds, but like he just was kind of an afterthought. The first half, I saw a lot of PJ Washington, Najee Marshall took over the game. And I think it's just that Anthony Davis is always going to be a really good number two. It's been a minute since he's been in New Orleans Pelicans when he was going off of those, you know, Wilt-like numbers. He's been hurt since then, and time has passed. He's not the same player that he was before. I think the Lakers recognize that. They got a shot to get Luka. Like, who doesn't do that? Right. So it's interesting now that the Dallas Mavericks do have still have a shot to in the play-in here. But I don't know what this team looks like. It's good that they got Derek Lively back. It's good that they got Daniel Gafford back. But you don't really have the guards to really keep up in this Western Conference race in the playoffs. So, yeah, when I was talking about the closure, it was more about Mavs fans and their allegiance to Luka, not the Mavs. The Mavs situation, that is far from over, and who knows what's going to happen. Nico getting fired wouldn't be a surprise to me, but they got to win back their fan base.
I heard what you said, and I still think you're wrong. Every time that man comes to Dallas, he's going to get cheered like that. They're not going to go to a space where Luka Doncic walks into that building and he gets booed. It's just
Would you liken it to like LeBron leaving Cleveland? And every time he goes back there, like, it's like, oh, our chosen one has returned.
The second time.
Okay.
Not the first time. First time was a wee bit different.
Yeah. So that's the difference in this situation. As you stated, it was like there was no rhyme or reason to make this move or make this trade. Luka wasn't asking out. There was no contractual issues, at least that we knew about, other than the big price tag that was coming, the Supermax. But there was no indication that there was any strife to make something happen. This was all on the management team of the Dallas Mavericks, which makes that hurt even more. Yeah. At least in the other situations, there was also like, there was some kind of smoking gun. It was like, nah, this isn't really working out, or my time is up, or we need to do something different. Like the Klay Thompson thing. Like Klay gave Golden State, he'll always be beloved in Golden State.
Right.
But it had ran its course, not with Luka. It was just like, yo, this is a guy who's supposed to be a franchise Steph Curry-like impact on this franchise.
Two things came up for me as I thought about, like, the amount of Laker jerseys in Dallas and watching the reaction. Two things stuck out for me, Dan, and I want to know if it hits you. One, the Lakers got two real dudes that can do crazy things down the stretch of games. Like, LeBron can rest to a large degree because Luka is such a high usage guy. Like he's going to control the ball for large segments of the game, where even if Anthony Davis was at his best, he wasn't going to be the main ball handler. Like that's like a half a thing that stuck out to me. And I literally, Dan, lost my train of thought because I was holding the thought for so long, I lost it. And this is why when you're doing a podcast, like 2 hours after you land and you're on 2 hours of sleep, like this is not going to work. And I know Dakota's like, oh my God, Vinny, seriously. Yes, I lost my train of thought. But the part of them being like a contender, like that, like that's real. Like this thing brings them closer together to some degree. Oh, I got the thought now. The emotion from Luka struck me because there's never been somebody who's been unhappy to be a Los Angeles Laker. Like all the guys who have gone there, from Shaq to Kobe to Magic.
Dwight Howard.
No, Dwight wanted that trade there, but he didn't want to stay. But he wanted the trade there.
True.
Like Dwight left, but he wanted to go there. All the stars the Lakers got, these guys willingly came to them. LeBron, Anthony Davis, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, you're going back to him saying, hey, I want to play in New York or L.A., and he got traded to L.A. Like all these guys, even though Kobe and Magic were drafted, they wanted to be Lakers and made it known that they wanted to be Lakers as opposed to wanting to be somewhere else. Luka Doncic is the first superstar for the franchise that loves superstars that did not have a say in coming to the franchise. He might be the first, he might be the only one. And that, I think, hits people a little bit differently because everybody's supposed to be happy to be a Laker. And it's not that Luka's not happy to be a Laker.
Right.
He just wanted to be somewhere else.
Yeah, I think that that's fair. And I think that this was an opportunity for the Lakers to really rally around and give that support to Luka in a very emotional moment where now that trust has now been built. Like, yeah, they've played games together. They've obviously been working on their chemistry and all that. But like for them to rally around him. And then also, Austin Reeves didn't even play a particularly good game. So, like, that's what makes this team just so scary is that, as you were pointing out before, it was like, you have two ball-dominant guys that can take over the game at various points, and then you can switch them interchangeably. And then you still also have Austin Reeves, who's become, you know, one of the best third options in the league now. So this Lakers team, now that they got this connectivity going, like, this could be a scary outcome. But I don't know. The Western Conference is absolutely crazy. So it's good that they locked that playoff spot in now, because the rest of the Western Conference with the games that are left to play, it's going to get wild.
It's a bloodbath. This whole thing is a bloodbath. And it's going to get worse before it gets better for everybody, which means it's going to be a lot more entertaining for the next few weeks. We're going to pause for a minute, pay some bills, and we'll be right back with more of The Good Word. Welcome back to The Good Word here with my man Dan Titus. Dan, the Denver Nuggets decided to fire everybody. Everything must go. Maybe even you. I think that was from Friday After Next with Money Mike. Calvin Booth, GM, gone. Michael Malone, coach, gone. I want to start with what I know, and then I'm going to go with you and see what you feel, how this hits you, Dan. They wanted to fire Michael Malone, or Calvin Booth wanted to fire that man multiple times. Like, they just did not get along. Now, it's unprecedented to fire the coach with three games left in the regular season and the GM with three games left in the regular season, and you're the fourth seed in the conference, and you have, you know, an MVP candidate and everything else, right? That relationship had soured for a very, very long time, and now we know, because Nikola Jokic told us from his own lips, I knew about it before it was announced. It wasn't a discussion. It was a notification. In other words, Pontius Pilate, baby. My hands is clean. I ain't got nothing to do with nothing. I didn't step in and intervene. I couldn't step in and intervene because the decision had been made. Does it still shock you, the fact that the Denver Nuggets did this to their top basketball executive, to their franchise winningest coach, and a coach that's led them to an NBA title just 2 years ago? Or are you of the mindset, Dan, that anything can happen in today's NBA when you got NFL-like setups where every team looks like they 9-7 or 7-9?
Yeah, I've had a couple of days to think about it now. So, I lean toward, I'm still surprised that they did it at this point in the season. Watching the game last night, you could see that, you know, Jokic, it seemed like he had a more of a voice, which I think we haven't really seen too much of him being the vocal leader. Like, right. Obviously, he's the guy that orchestrates everything. Right. But him actually calling plays with Aaron Gordon, having having that communication with his team, it's very important, and I don't know if maybe that was lost, maybe with Mike Malone having the heavy hand, but like he was also put in so much work as their winningest coach. They got a championship. You got to trust your leadership. So I'm just shocked that they did it. I'm not surprised that it happened because, to your point, they were talking about Calvin Booth and his disconnect with Mike Malone for quite some time. Booth wanting to play the younger players.
Yeah,
Malone wanted them to invest in veterans. They've lost their defensive identity. Their defense has been bottom 10 since the All-Star break. Mike Malone wasn't connecting with the team anymore. Right. So you have to make a change. And if one thing we've seen over the last 2 years between Adrian Griffin, the Bucks being a very good team, and them ousting him before, like, nope, we're done. We've seen enough. This ain't gonna work. Taylor Jenkins, nope, seen enough. Let's ride out. That's the new norm. So it's kind of like two things can be true. Like, I think, yeah, I'm surprised by it, but also this is just the way the NBA is now. No one's safe. Anything can happen. We just talked about Luka Doncic getting traded. So, like, yeah, this is just the NBA now. No one's safe. No one can be trusted. Your job, you're lucky. I mean, even Steve Kerr was talking about, it's like, man, if Mike's gone now, like, I'll probably be fired in no time. It's just inevitable. And that's what it is. Like, that's just the state of the NBA. You win. If you don't have the locker room, we're going to find something else, somebody else to do it.
A number of things stick out for me, and I'm fascinated by this. The number one thing is winning a championship will not save you. How's overperforming that? Will not save you. Putting up better numbers will not save you.
Crazy.
If they want to fire you, they will fire you. Now, here's the thing that I do understand. I do believe NBA coaches have a general shelf life because of the way that the rosters change, because of a certain type of coach. Michael Malone, rage timeouts, cusses his players out, airs them out, you know, after games and everything else.
True.
After a while, that does run thin. That is a certain type of coach, an archetype of coach that belonged in a different era, or that was more prevalent in a different era. The Van Gundys, the Pat Rileys in Miami, the Tom Thibodeaux, his first years in Chicago. Like, that archetype of coach fit into a different era. And just because Nikola Jokic, we all think he's a certain type of superstar, for various reasons, we think he's a certain type of superstar, but we don't like to talk about those things in meetings. We ascribe a certain value to him as if he don't get sick of your too. Right? No, that's the thing for me. Yeah. You can get sick of the coach. And this is one thing that I know was the case. The front office was frustrated with Michael Malone because he didn't coach the stars harder. Like, he was coaching hard, but he wouldn't say, Jokic, I need you to play more defense. Jamal Murray, I need you to do this better, harder. Not play 36 minutes a night, but I need you to be better in the 33 minutes that I want you to play. Instead, he rolled the young guys. And then when the young guys are being rolled and you're letting this other stuff slide, that creates an imbalance. You wind up losing the locker room one way or the other anyway. And then you bring in Russell Westbrook, who was a value signing at $3.5 million. Mm-hmm. And you look at the numbers, Dan, and it's like, oh, he's productive. But you see the meltdowns every team that he's on. There's only so many minutes you can play Russ before the returns start getting bad. There's only so much responsibility you can give a player like that at this stage of his career before there's diminishing returns. And you got to see it in Indiana. You got to see it against Minnesota. Like, these are games that are going to lose you critical playoff positioning. And if the players, the young players, they may be able to handle Jamal Murray, Nikola Jokic getting the soft hand, they not going to handle somebody who doesn't have the equity with the franchise that those two guys have. And you're being soft on Russell Westbrook when you probably need to be reining him in.
Yeah, so that's the part where I was still wondering, and we haven't gotten enough information in my opinion on what actually was going on behind the scenes. But I think Russell was obviously going to be the smoking gun if Mike Malone was riding for Russ and wanting to play him big minutes, and it not obviously working out. But I think people are still forgetting the fact that Jamal Murray's been injured. Would this have happened if Jamal Murray was playing to the level that he was playing earlier? I don't know. But him missing out of the equation certainly hurts. And yeah, they're getting valuable minutes out of Jalen Pickett, which I don't think that was, I mean, that was probably by design. I don't know if that was a Booth call or a Malone call, but like, it's kind of interesting that he's getting 30 minutes a night in April. And Russ played, what, 16 minutes last night? Mm-hmm. So
didn't play big minutes late.
and didn't. So I think we've already seen, like, all right, maybe that was one of the main reasons why this relationship fractured in the background. I did think it was interesting that, you know, to your initial point of, like, Jokic and how this happened, how he saw it. He said he got the decision and he accepted it. Very mature answer of a leader that's like, yo, man, I don't want to deal with this BS anymore. I just want to play ball. So whatever we need to do. And it kind of echoed that in the press conference with David. What's his last name? Adelman. Yeah, Adelman. He was kind of like this free flowing, like chill dude. Like, yeah, you know, like we kind of just we wanted to get the communication back up and running to make sure that everyone feels comfortable, get that trust back. That's all the right things you need to say. But also you're just holding on by a thread right now. And still to do this at this stage is very concerning, because I think a lot of people were probably picking the Nuggets to be one of the teams to potentially come out of the Western Conference and vie for a championship. But with all this stuff going on, the extracurriculars, it's kind of hard to back them now, even with the best player on the planet.
I thought they were going in the wrong direction. And I thought the way that they play late in close games gives a team a mental edge against them. Like, if the returns on Russell Westbrook are such, and you're like, oh, we'll let this thing self-destruct on its own, as opposed to, man, Jokic is going to beat us. Like, no, we're going to let someone else beat themselves type of thing. Now, here's the problem that teams have. And we're going to talk about the Phoenix Suns in the last segment. So you're going to hear a consistent theme when I talk about this. The economic reality of the NBA is such that it's going to be very hard to have three players on a max contract, especially if you're going to have one player on a designated player max contract, the super, super big max contract. And that's Jokic. Porter and Jamal Murray are on max contracts. Porter's contract, Max, was agreed to and signed before this new collective bargaining agreement, when you were just paying a certain amount of dollars per where you were in the luxury tax. Now that there's the aprons, it makes it so much more difficult to augment the talent that you have to maybe build around it. You can't get guys off the scrap heap of, you know, buyouts. You can't even sign veteran minimum guys. There's fewer mechanisms to actually, you know, augment your talent. So that being said, put that in mind. KCP, gone, right? Jeff Green, gone. Bruce Brown, gone. Bruce Brown. Like veteran guys. Mm-hmm. And if you can't sign veteran guys, you got to get your draft picks right. Now, they missed on Zeke Nagy and giving him a four-year deal. But Peyton Watson, Julian Strother, Christian Browns is a revelation this year. He's been great, in the candidate for most improved player. Like, he managed to break through. You have to wind up playing some of your young guys so that you don't run your old guys to the ground. And I think that's where the schism was between the coach who wants to play his vets because he trusts his vets, and the GM who was like, hey, I don't want to run the vets down. Can you invest in some of these young guys so maybe they'll be ready come playoff time? Excuse me. And I think that's just a natural tension. Yeah. Coaches want to win tonight. Front offices look out for the big picture and not necessarily just, oh, what happens with the vets? They want the young, cost-controlled players that they don't have to worry about paying in this new economic reality to be able to figure things out, to kind of do the two timeline thing. And when you have three guys on the max, it's going to be really hard.
So what do you think is the next move? Michael Porter Jr. is probably going to be on the trade block this offseason.
I thought it was a real chance that he was going to get moved this year. Like, I had written it earlier that around December, they were really sniffing around Zach LaVine in Chicago. And I thought part of that was Zach LaVine is confident enough to believe on a given night, I'm the best player on the floor. Jokic is the best player in the world, but I'm that dude tonight. And I think when you have a Jokic, he becomes very easy to rely on. Oh, we just throw it to Nikola. He's a 30-point triple-double every night, like that sort of thing. And that creates another imbalance. He was playing the most minutes of his career. Jamal Murray playing the most minutes of his career, coming off of an ACL a few years ago, and now he has a hamstring. Like, so there's multiple ways that you can view this. And the Nuggets, instead of picking one over the other, especially with Calvin Booth not having a contract beyond this season, they said, we'll get rid of them both, and we're going to start fresh with interim coach, front office search, everything else, and hopefully we'll get a joke between now and the playoffs.
Man, they got some work to do, because you still got two different, you know, now that you got to go find a GM, you got to go find a head coach, and then, oh, by the way, keep Jokic happy. How do you build around him now? Because, you know, Michael Porter Jr. was thanking Mike Malone for everything that he did for him. Definitely the Nuggets invested in Michael Porter Jr. through his back issue. They've been sticking with him for a while. But, like, the Jamal Murray thing, he was hurt since the second round of the playoffs last year. He struggled through the Olympics. He got through most of the season unscathed, but to your point, like, he just wore down. He's playing a lot of minutes. He may not be ready for the playoffs. So this could be a very quick exit. And if that's the case, like, I don't know, man. This offseason is going to get interesting because they got to decide what they want to do. Do you invest in the youth or do you go out and spend and go above the apron, which they haven't been willing to do? So they got to, that's a crazy philosophy change. I don't know. It's going to be a very, I'm curious to see what their move is, their next move is.
Look, you've got Nikola Jokic at 29 years old, and it does not look like he's going to be slowing down anytime soon. I know one of the reasons the Nuggets did this is they felt like they were going to waste another Jokic year, and you don't want to waste another Jokic year. And just because Nikola Jokic doesn't look like other NBA players does not mean that Nikola Jokic doesn't get tired of your and will not ask you for a trade. Like, we think of these athletes as we put them in boxes and they can't get out of these boxes. And I'm telling you, people get tired and they can love Denver. They can love the franchise. They saw what happened to Luka Doncic.
I think Milwaukee is going to be having a similar fate this offseason too.
It's going to be, hey, we talked about breakups in the first segment. We're going to have some real love doctor talk here, baby. It's going to be, it ain't me. It's you. It is all you, honey. I hate to tell you this. I'm leaving because it's you. I ain't leaving because it's me. I'm leaving because it's you. And guess what? You're going to send me where I want to go. Because if you don't, it's going to get ugly. That's unfortunate. Yeah. Speaking of what's unfortunate, the Golden State Warriors last night decided to play with their food. They had a 12-point fourth quarter lead against the San Antonio Spurs. And then the dude who they swore could not make a big shot in big games because they seen the movies before, Harrison Barnes made – I've never seen Harrison Barnes make a shot like that ever in his life. A buzzer beater over the outstretched arms of Jimmy Butler. I think they outscored the Warriors like 34 to 25. It was like outscored the Warriors big time in the fourth quarter. I don't have the numbers in front of me. But it was a collapse. And now the Warriors sit in seventh place in the Western Conference, which means you're in the play-in. 47-33 with, what, two games left. You got to win them both just to be in the conversation of not being in the play-in. And you might wind up playing the Lakers in round one in a series that Adam Silver might like, but the Warriors and Lakers ain't going to like. Like, this is the worst-case scenario for them, like losing to the Rockets and then losing to the Spurs, who ain't trying to win games. Like, this is bad.
Yeah, this is bad. I'd say the one silver lining, though, Jimmy Butler's been very passive over the last several games. I think he tried to take on – he knew he had to take over the game, and I think he scored like 13 points in the fourth quarter, accounted for 81% of their points between points and assists. So he was aggressive. I think that was something that they needed to see as we're approaching the playoffs. Now, they definitely played with their food. You can't be losing to the San Antonio Spurs, let alone letting Harrison Barnes hit in that game winner. Like, that one was sweet victory for him. I feel like he always kind of tries to rise to the occasion, but he never actually got that moment until then. It's like, oh, let me try to mess up y'all playoff hopes.
He got his moment. He played spoiler.
It took time, but he got there. And also to see Chris Paul somehow playing most of the games this season, like, that's another surprise. I'm going to write something about the surprises of the season. Like, why is Chris Paul's old ass still playing all these games? Meaningless games. But the Warriors should be concerned, but I think I'm more concerned about Memphis. Their remaining schedule is brutal. They got Denver, Minnesota, and then Dallas. So I think that there's still a spot. The Warriors, they got – who's their last two opponents? They got the Clippers.
They're Portland. They are Portland and Clippers.
So I think that they might be able to sneak in there, but it's going to be an interesting race. Some things need to happen. There's going to be tiebreakers. They messed up. They should have won last night. That could bite them if they got to go to the play-in. That's not something they expected on the run that they were making after the All-Star break and acquiring Jimmy Butler.
Right. I don't know if Dakota's going to have the standings up, but I'm just going to tell you guys, for those who are listening to this, and by the time you hear this, this might be completely obsolete anyway because it just changes, right? Nuggets are at 40-32, but they are a game behind the Lakers. They could still theoretically catch the Lakers at the 3 seed, which flips home court advantage, and it flips where you are on the side of the bracket. If you're on the third seed, that puts you in line to play, in theory, the Houston Rockets in round two. If you're on the four line, that puts you in line to play the Oklahoma City Thunder in round two. Granted, maybe people aren't afraid of Oklahoma City. Call it what you want to call it. The Clippers are surging, 48 and 32. I think they won six in a row. They're at five. They can get to four, maybe even three, depending on how the tiebreaker shake out. You just mentioned the Memphis Grizzlies. They're 47 and 32. They're right on the line, a half game ahead of Golden State in the play-in. But you just mentioned their schedule. Golden State has the Clippers in Golden State the last game of the season. Who knows? That game could mean everything. That game could mean nothing. Right. We legit don't know. It sets up for a monster last game of the season on Sunday afternoon. Everybody, I believe, plays at the same time.
Yeah.
So that nobody can tank and nobody can, you know, exercise any chicanery going on. Like, because we know teams will try, man, well, let's see if they're up.
Right.
We can lose this game and we can sit guys and all that type of stuff. But either way it goes, it is setting up, it is shaping up for a bloodbath in the Western Conference. And as I told people before, play with Houston at your own risk.
Might get back.
I wouldn't want to play the fighting Emays and them pack of rabid dogs in the playoffs. Mm-mm. Get your feelings hurt.
I think there's certain teams that I feel like injuries happened at the right time. The Houston Rockets is one of those teams. When Fred VanVleet went down with that ankle injury, that opportunity gave Amen Thompson to just run with it.
Give also
Jabari Smith Jr. And then Tari Eason has been in and out of the lineup too. But now if that team is fully healthy, they're going to be defensive menaces. And I mean, I don't want to see that team in the first round or the second round. That is a very dangerous team that's well coached, that's surging at the right time. Similar to, you know, there's been some talk about the Clippers, man. Winning six straight, eight of their last 10, and Kawhi Leonard healthy, the run that he's been on lately, another dangerous team that I don't know that people want to see if he can get through it. But we've seen this
before.
Give it a rock gif
of him rolling his eyes. Remember that? When he's with the Nation of Domination, he rolled his eyes or whatever and took his deep breath. Right. Now, if you're asking me who's the best playoff coach amongst all of them, it's Tyronn Lue. But if you're asking me to invest in playoff Harden, and you're asking me to invest in the health of Kawhi Leonard, I don't know if I'm investing in the health of Kawhi Leonard. My best friend.
Norm Powell, if he gets Zubac?
Yes.
I'm saying these guys are both. I mean, Vika Zubac should have been most improved player as well.
Yes. Vika Zubac could be on all NBA third team. If we were still doing positions, he could have a viable case to be an all NBA third team center. I'm not, but we know that this runs through your best two players.
Sure.
And you're asking me if you trust Jim Harden and if you trust Kawhi Leonard's health, not his performance, his knees holding up. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, James will give you at least, he can win you two games.
Two?
And then it's going to be a little dicey.
Two? Just imagine,
you don't know when them games are going to happen, though. It could be a game six, could be a game seven, could be a game one. Yeah, I don't know. But he looks great, though. Like, as much as I can't hate, man, I think the Clippers, I don't know, man. We'll see.
I'm still stuck on two games, but you're right. James Harden has been impressive. Kawhi Leonard has been amazing. Like all that other stuff I've been saying, Kawhi Leonard has been amazing.
But I don't know if
you can trust it. We'll be right back for the last word. Dan, let's play a little game of trivia. It's time for the last word. Now, if I told you two teams had the identical record, or one team was a game behind the Miami Heat, and they were also tied with the Portland Trail Blazers for wins, you would probably be like, there's no team that actually exists. If I told you that in October, that would be the case, you would say, what team are you talking about that has the same record as the Trailblazers and is a game behind the Miami Heat? You would think something went catastrophically wrong. Do you know who that team is?
Oof. Look, I feel like the Pelicans have gone through some things, but it's probably the Suns.
Yeah, it ain't. Hey, smart money ain't on the Pelicans. They only got 21 wins. The Phoenix Suns and Trailblazers are tied at 35-45. For the Trailblazers, that constitutes a successful season. Joe Cronin got a contract extension, and for whatever reason, they're not. They don't know how they feel about Chauncey Billups. Whatever. But the Phoenix Suns of Kevin Durant, multiple time champion,
unreal.
Devin Booker in the prime of his career, Bradley Beal on the Supermax, Mike Budenholzer as a championship-winning head coach, by far, if the Philadelphia 76ers did not exist, Dan's Philadelphia 76ers didn't exist, we would be saying that the Phoenix Suns are by far the most disappointing team in the NBA. And they still might be the most disappointing team in the NBA. I don't know what happened. I can say what happened. We can say what happened, right? You got, once again, three guys on the super on Big Max deals, and you weren't able to put much around them. Mike Budenholzer did not do a good job coaching this team this year. Bradley Beal was not available and was not impactful. And now you're going to have to find a taker for Kevin Durant because you tried to trade him to Golden State and you didn't even let him know. Like, this thing could not have gone any worse for the most expensive team in the NBA.
Top down, man. Like, I was listening to Devin Booker talk last night when they got eliminated from the playoffs. And it's like, man, this has just been a slow bleed out. And it really has, because there's just been so many different points of the season that you can point to. It's like, you came into the season, Yusuf Nurkic was supposed to be your version, Mike Budenholzer's version of Brooke Lopez. He was trash. They had to send him out. Bradley Beal, the no trade clause, worst contract in the NBA. Unsurprisingly, he was not available for portions of the seasons that were critical. Kevin Durant did his thing, but then he got hurt. There was just not enough. There were not enough floor raisers of this team to be consistent. And I don't know. Like, this is another interesting offseason. Is Devin Booker, as loyal as he's been, he said he wants to retire with the Phoenix Suns. When is he going to have enough?
He can leave and come back.
Absolutely.
You said he wants to retire with the Phoenix Suns. He can leave and come back.
He can. He can.
He can sign a one-day deal when he's done playing. I don't know if I think. I think what will happen is, clearly, they're going to work with Kevin Durant to try to find a home for him. But once again, when you're in the second apron, you have to legit match dollar for dollar on a trade, which makes it very difficult to do. And Kevin Durant has 1 year left on his contract, and then he's an unrestricted free agent. So that bears something.
Yeah, that's going to be priority one, is finding a home for Kevin Durant. But then everything else, it's just so hard. I mean, I'm not going to, you know, the Lakers are aside. I think they're an outlier just because you have Luka and LeBron together. But the big three model doesn't really work anymore. Financially, it can't work. So you're stuck with Bradley Beal unless somehow he okays some trade to somewhere. But it sounds like he's very comfortable in Phoenix. His family's comfortable. He doesn't look like he's going anywhere. So the Suns now, they're screwed. Mike Budenholzer, they talked to him about whether he felt like he was going to get an extension. There's been no conversation of it. That says enough. He probably ain't coming back. I'm wondering what situation is worse, the Sixers or the Suns? Because at least the Sixers actually figured out how to tank appropriately. Yeah, Joel Embiid's getting arthroscopic knee surgery, so there's going to be some more learnings there, and Paul George's contract is ugly.
Wait a minute.
It's comparable. This was such a bad season, and it's going to have such a downstream effect. I think you could argue that the Suns had just as bad of a season, if not worse, than the Sixers.
The taste is worst with Phoenix. The situation is worse with Philadelphia, because you're paying Joel Embiid big money for like the next 5 years. You gave him an extension, and his knees are macaroni, machete. Yeah. Like, his knees are done. Paul George is another old guy that you signed to big, big money, and he's not going anywhere. Like, you tried to trade him midway through his first season, and then the league was like, oh, no, you going to live with your mistakes, brother. Kevin Durant still has a lot of value across the NBA. You can reasonably ask the question, can Kevin Durant be your best player on a championship team? Or is he a super, 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 super high-level 1B? If that's the case, you really got something. Devin Booker, I'm curious what the league thinks of him in terms of him being high level number one? Like, do you bring in Devin Booker to be your team's best player, or do you bring him in to be a complementary player, a supplementary ball handler? He's not great catching and shooting, but he's a great shooter. Like, I'm curious where the league puts him, especially relative to his contract. You mentioned Bradley Beal. He still has the no trade clause, which is a 15% trade kicker for any team that takes him on, unless the Suns use the stretch provision to get rid of him, which I would not be surprised if they did, because Matt Ishbia seems like the type that just makes impulsive decisions as opposed to, you know, sitting with the decisions that he's made and eating it. That's a situation that's not as easy to get out of. Philadelphia, y'all seen the movie Ghost? You seen the movie Ghost with Whoopi Goldberg
and Patrick Swayze?
You in trouble, child. That's what that is. You in trouble, honey. You in trouble, child. Whatever the line is, that's Philly. You in trouble.
But what do they got left? If you seriously consider offers for KD, if you seriously consider offers for Devin Booker, you'll get some draft picks back. But then what's the rest of your team? You're going to be rebuilding for the next five to X amount of years. At least Sixers can still compete. They got Maxey. Jeremy Cain's going to be back. I'm just saying, Phoenix, you still have to compete in that tough Western Conference. Like, I just don't – where's the path to success for them? It just – to me, it seems like it's all bad.
Yeah.
I don't see the upside. Grayson Allen, that contract didn't work out really because they stopped giving him minutes. You got Royce O'Neal, solid role player. Tyus Jones, cool. He got benched for Connor Gillespie. You got Bol Bol, who had a moment, and then he went away. What else is left? You got nothing.
Sometimes
Ryan Dunn is probably their best asset right now that isn't their stars.
Sometimes it's best to recognize that you have nothing and you start over.
But is that Matt Ishbia's way, though?
It might not be. But somebody's going to have that. Once again, the theme of today, hard conversations. The Love Doctor has made his return. Sometimes you got to have difficult conversations. Sometimes somebody's got to hear some things that they don't want to hear. And I think that's what's going to happen. Philly, they can hear the things they want to hear, but you ain't trading Joel Embiid because you can't trade him. You ain't trading Paul George because you can't trade him. Like, that's why you are stuck. Phoenix is bad, and they can get worse, but that means they can start digging themselves out. Philly's got years before they can even start digging themselves out.
We're going to revisit that take. I think something's going to happen. Starting with, I think Maury's going to get fired too, but we'll see.
Yeah, that might be good for Maury. At the end of the day, that is my man, Dan Titus. Dan, I appreciate you for joining me, man, on a crazy, crazy Thursday morning, man. Appreciate you, bro.
No doubt, bro.
Thanks to producer Dakota and the entire team that works hard behind the scenes on this show. I'll be back next week as the regular season ends, the play-in begins, followed by the playoffs on the next episode of The Good Word. Until then, everybody be safe.